We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for Thursday, August 11th. We are getting into both my John McKechnie here NFFC draft and Mario's NFFC draft. I went on Wednesday night. Mario went over the weekend, so we're going to break those down. We're also going to take a little bit of a deep dive into the Patriots offense, see what's going on there, because the reports are a little bit iffy coming out of Foxborough right now. So we'll get into all of that and more here on this edition. Let's start the show. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. This podcast presented by our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Big thanks to Alan Sislowski for filling in for me last Thursday. I was in Texas, and it's fortunate if you're watching the live stream that our podcast runs on Thursday, because Mario, I had an impressive forehead tan that has since dissipated. I wore a headband to the pool all day on Friday and Saturday, and the headband did not cover the eyebrow area.
Okay, boy, I took this exactly for the opposite. I thought you were saying your forehead was sunburned and no other part of you.
Which would have been
way cooler.
That would have been an interesting look. You know, I might have to balance it out with that this coming weekend, but. Yes, Texas was good to me other than that. Yeah, I'm in desperate need of that. And I think tanning my forehead is really the way of going about that.
Yeah, leathery.
Yeah, I mean, it literally was kind of leathery. It was a no bueno. So I got to be careful with that the rest of the summer. Anywho, so today we're going to get into our NFFC drafts. Both of us were able to draft in the RotoWire Online Championships over the course of this last week. Before we get there, though, a quick little breaking news nugget. James White, noted New England Patriot, has announced his retirement as of Thursday morning.
Yeah, so they, for some reason, weren't really telegraphing it any earlier beyond, you know, the pick of Pierce Strong and Kevin Harris. But yeah, I don't even remember the last time we heard of him practicing or anything with that hip. And, of course, getting up there in age. Really good career. I suppose Ramondre Stevenson is the presumed replacement for, you know, the targets at least, the passing down reps at least, even though he's a very differently used player. And, it's interesting because I don't think the Patriots would have took Strong and Harris unless they kind of had some curiosity about using them. And I know Strong missed some practices early. I don't know if he's in the picture really right now. Haven't heard anything emphatic about Harris either, but with White out of the picture, there might be more reason to care about whoever the third running back in the Patriots offense might be.
Nah, absolutely. Because, you know, White was, you know, uniquely good at the pass catching third down type of functions. So I don't know if there's an obvious guy for that. I mean, Stevenson can catch a little bit. Harris,
you would think Strong, but I don't know where his game is at. And I don't know what his whole deal in general with the offense is.
No, exactly. But you know, kudos to James White on an excellent NFL career, especially relative to, you know, where the expectations were.
Really good Wisconsin coming in too.
Yes, I actually ran into him a couple weeks after he was crushing it in the Super Bowl at noted Madison Bar Wando's in the upstairs. One of the very few times okay. that I made it all that's the way up to. he's a nice guy.
Oh, of course. No. I know it's like if you're a football player, like you probably just get took to those places by you know, the whole team at once, basically. But yeah, that's just kind of funny because it's like a place where you shouldn't be at if you're older than 21 exactly. Otherwise, you're a creep, basically.
Seems like that is kind of like the destination for people that are coming back into town. Like I
know alumni who don't want to believe they're old. Yeah.
Yep. That kind of stuff. So, but either way, fun little anecdote there. But yes, James White, no longer.
It wasn't the KK, at least.
Yes, that to me would have been far much more straight to jail. But moving out of the Madison Bar discussion and into the NFFC discussion, that's what we call a segue, folks. Let's dive in. So you and I had pretty similar drafts, and we'll kind of unpack that as the show goes. But you went ahead and you took Justin Jefferson first overall, and your draft took place, what, Saturday?
I think it was Saturday. It was either that or Sunday.
So going in, and this is the type of draft where there is what's called the KDS, the Kentucky Derby style, where you are able to order your draft selection preferences. Did you have 1-1 as your top pick? Were you expecting, or were you kind of hoping to be picking out of that spot? Because there is the third round reversal that ends up kind of making it a little bit tougher on those with the early first round picks.
I didn't want the first pick, but I didn't set the thing in time. So I think that's the default setting is one. And so I ended up with that. Initially, I was kind of like, oh, crap. I don't know what I should do now. But I just locked onto Jefferson because, I mean, I've said multiple times that he's probably my number one player. So I thought, well, even if you know, strategy soundness aside, at least I'm kind of putting my money where my mouth is. So at least no one can complain at me about that. But the more I thought about it, and this was a totally incidental thing, I didn't plan this. But when I looked at the ADP of the RotoWire Online Championship NFFC drafts in the past like week or whatever, the picks that I had, the first, the 24th and the 36th, whatever that is, whatever it actually is, they tend to pretty loosely correlate to the first, it's more so like Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey, but the second and the third round picks were almost exactly where Travis Etienne and Kyle Pitts were going. And so I like those guys a lot, obviously, and it was another chance to kind of put my money where my mouth is. So I immediately, when I started looking at it and trying to rationalize and think of my strategy, I was just like, okay, I'm trying to get Jefferson, Etienne, and Pitts, and if I can just do that, I'll be, you know, I won't complain too much. I won't say I'll be happy, but I'll not complain quite as much.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely, you know, a good start. Etienne obviously moving up boards, and you know, this particular draft has an overall component to it. So Etienne with the upside that he presents, I thought that he totally made sense as your second pick. And then Kyle Pitts, of course, going in the third round. He also went in the third round in my draft to me, and was talking with Greg Ambrosius and Tom Kesnick on XM on Wednesday night after my draft. And they were commenting that Kyle Pitts has seemingly become like the poster boy for RotoWire. And I told them that, yes, I was contractually obligated to stay on brand and make sure that I was the guy that ended up with Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed in your draft board, it didn't play out quite the same way, but I took Pitts. I think this also was the case in your draft. I took him like three picks after Andrews went, four after Andrews went. But Darren Waller in my draft didn't go for nearly three rounds after I took Kyle Pitts, and then Kittle went shortly after Waller. Whereas I'm pretty sure Waller went maybe a little more than two rounds, maybe two rounds in your case, but it wasn't quite as far as in mine.
He was mid fifth.
Okay, yeah. So when I saw Waller falling to, I guess it must have been the late sixth in mine, I kind of started panicking. I was like, oh my God, I did the fish move, taking a tight end when all the guys who are sitting on, 50 NFFC drafts, they're taking their tight ends in like the 10th and 12th round. But I guess, and again, this is just rationalization, I guess, on my part, but I guess I'm just willing to wager that if there's an exception to the rule of waiting at tight ends, then Kyle Pitts this year, at least at the third, fourth round turn, should be one such case. And
in full PPR, nonetheless, I think that, adds.
So I'm either in practice taking Kyle Pitts, Waller, or Albert Aquegunim this year. Like, I don't really take any other tight ends, and you'll notice one of those is a good 9-8 rounds later than the other two. So Albert Aquegunim loses a little tiny bit, I think, in PPR relative to half point PPR. And I've mostly been taking him in half point PPR best ball drafts. So I was a little less eager to take my main tight end backup option in this format. So that also kind of nudged me a little bit toward Pitts, I suppose.
I totally get that. And I think that this is a good year to kind of have your guys circled as far as tight end goes. I went early tight end as well, like we mentioned. I circled back on a second tight end. We'll get to that a little bit more when we unpack my team. But I felt a little bit painted into a corner, but that's because of the way that the wide receiver market shaped up in the 8th through 10th rounds. That kind of threw me for a loop, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Going back to Jefferson, though, do you feel like part of the rationale for going with him, and this is less about Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey, but for the bulk of draft season, it's been Cooper Kupp, slam dunk, first receiver going off the board. Is this, and tell me if I'm wrong, but is this a little bit of a reaction to maybe some concern that Matthew Stafford and the elbow issue that he's dealing with? And then you kind of zoom out the long-term injury problems that Stafford has had over the course of his career. I mean, he's played through, almost all of them, but at the same time, he's been banged up a lot. Last year was kind of like the perfect storm as far as him being able to be out there all season. But do you think that some of that played into it when it comes to Kupp versus Jefferson?
Well, I certainly didn't mean to fade Kupp or anything, but it for me was a combination of a lot of considerations. Like, one is that I'm just really, really high on Justin Jefferson, and in NFFC, the receivers tend to go pretty early, and the running backs do too. But the receivers, it's kind of like, I don't know, you don't want to have bench points at receiver. You really don't want to have a low point total at receiver. And I value that Justin Jefferson is a receiver who I think could be the top overall fantasy player in PPR this year. And just taking him to a large extent just solves the question of receiver right there. So I value that a lot, especially because in this current market at running back, I think guys like Elijah Mitchell are too cheap. So if I'm taking guys like Elijah Mitchell and Cordarrelle Patterson all the time, I'm either going to end up leaving them on my bench, or I'm going to have to take fewer running backs early than I have most years. So I really liked the ADP setup in this case for the Jefferson ETN Pitts combo, but I definitely had to think about Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey, and Cooper Kupp all. But I've had Jefferson as my number one player after Taylor rather this off season, I guess. So I preferred him over Kupp. The Vikings floor, I think, is just so high with the usage that Jefferson has and how effective he's been with his usage. And that actually could improve a little bit with this new offense. Not that I expect the offense to get much better exactly, but I can imagine Jefferson getting just a little bit more work yet. And he has less of a durability history, less of an injury history, I should say, than Cooper Kupp. Like, Cooper Kupp, as much as we worry about Stafford and that elbow and Stafford's durability in general, I mean, he's gotten hurt. He's gotten hurt a number of ways over the years. Tough as he is, it's like there's only so much you can take, especially as it approaches the age that he is. So I'm a little tiny worried about Stafford's durability, yes, but Kupp has a knee history himself, and he's got to be pushing 30 already. So it's not like I'm expecting a decline with Kupp exactly. I just can't see as many ways as with Jefferson to fail. And I know it can still go wrong with any player, but I just perceive slightly less risk with Jefferson and no meaningfully different ceiling.
Okay. All right. That certainly checks out. I think that, you know, the way that you framed it as far as what's going on with the Rams, what's going on with Stafford, Cup, and where he is in his prime relative to Jefferson. Yeah, all of that certainly makes sense and can certainly steer you in that direction of Jefferson over Cup. I've opened myself up to that idea. Obviously, I took Jefferson third, first receiver off the board. So, yeah, definitely with you there. Was there any point in this draft, or let's go back to your running back strategy? Did you feel like you were just going to take best player available? You obviously took ETN in the second round, but fifth and sixth rounds, you go with Elijah Mitchell and Antonio Gibson. You mentioned that you have plenty of Mitchell shares thus far. Do you have much in the way of Gibson, and were you kind of expecting to leave the first six rounds with three running backs?
I didn't expect the three running backs detail, but by the time I took Pitts, and by the way, I took Jalen Waddle after Pitts, so Waddle is my wide receiver too. When I made that pick, it didn't take long for me to realize that I was going to have to go running back at the next pick, because I could see that the receivers that were going off the board to me would not be as useful at receiver as Mitchell and Gibson would be at running back. So in best ball, I actually probably have more Gibson than Mitchell, just because Gibson's a good magnitude cheaper at this point. Like, there's people who just believe like Antonio Gibson's not going to play this year. whatever, we've gone over it. But I thought, you know, getting three running backs who I consider very high upside PPR, especially like in the case of Mitchell, by the way, the whole narrative on him, which has been consistently stupid, completely in almost all accounts neglects to mention that he's their passing down guy. Like, Elijah Mitchell is taking all those Jamichael Hasty snaps from last year in passing downs that he couldn't take last year because he was taking too much of a workload as a runner, particularly. So, yeah, the 49ers are trying to keep Mitchell more around like 15 carries per game than 25 carries per game. But A, if they need 25, he's still their best candidate. And, you know, they have emergency situations where they just, you know, go to extents like that, even if they don't want to as a base function. And B, he's going to get more targets per snap than last year. So Mitchell is just point blank misevaluated. People are getting it totally wrong. In Gibson's case, I'm at least concerned for the offense. I think that's a stupid, stupid team. And Carson Wentz is a horrible player.
Who's Sam Howell.
Sam Howell needs to be the starter, man. I'm not even kidding. they need – or Heinicke. I mean, I think Heinicke would be better this year than last year now that there's more help there. But, yeah, Wentz is just atrocious. With that said, I mean, like, I took Gibson in the, like, same round, five or six picks before Tony Pollard went. It's like, that guy is literally a backup. So, whatever. I know that there's people who think, like, Brian Robinson must be good because he was a third-round pick and running backs don't matter. And taking a running back in the third is the same as taking one in the first 15 years ago. Whatever. I don't care. I'm willing at that point to take a chance on Gibson's talent, which people have completely lost track of. And it's in the sixth round, I think the risk is negligible relative to the upside.
Right, and you don't have to start him because you have those two running backs.
I also got Cordarrelle later, and I am not at all convinced that Cordarrelle falls outside of the top, like, 20 running backs in PPR scoring this year. I think people are totally wrong on him, too.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good running back value. I was starting to look at him once I got towards that eighth, ninth.
I got him in the 10th, for what it's worth, yeah.
Yes, so that was definitely a solid pick. Before we get on to a little bit more of your team, I want to touch on one of the more interesting, if nothing else, roster builds from your draft. The team picking out of the third spot took Christian McCaffrey and then hammered receiver. Let's see.
I don't remember his name, but that's one of the big money guys. And you'll notice he didn't take a tight end until very late. So he very clearly, and I guess it could have been pending, you know, the draft order or something, but he clearly was resolved to not spend at tight end, because he took Freiermuth in the 13th, Everett in the 15th, Hooper in the 18th. I would bet anything Hooper outscores Everett this year, by the way, and probably Freiermuth too, the way Mitch appears to be throwing in Pittsburgh practices. But this guy would not do this unless he had some, you know, basis. And also there's this other big money guy down at the 11th pick, and he didn't take his first tight end until Okwegbunam until the 12th. So yeah, you see those two guys, both big money guys, they're both going extremely receiver heavy from rounds like 2 through 8. And I am not drawn quite to that same thing, because I have different ideas about running back. And in this particular year, apparently Kyle Pitts, I think quite differently than them, but they know that there's a good basis for their strategy. And it's basically, you need a high point total at receiver. So you need probably like a couple horses at least, and then you need a couple viable breakout candidates. And so I assume chasing that somewhat unexpected breakout person, that breakout receiver, is why you see them willing to put like a fourth and a fifth receiver on their roster by the 7th or 8th round, even though, you know, my conventional concern there would be like, well, how am I starting all these guys? They must know through experience something like, you know, one of them will burn out and it doesn't matter because you got to spend the 2 picks in a row to get the other guy who breaks out and matters more, something like that. Mm-hmm. Though clearly I'm still taking a different approach.
Yeah. Just kind of have that low or that like really high bar to clear as far as production goes. And if a guy's not meeting it, it's like, okay, all right, well,
also
I'm just moving you to the bench.
Those guys both took running backs in the first two. So maybe, you know, maybe if they had Justin Jefferson, they would have had a slightly different approach. I don't know.
No, definitely. So yeah, that's an important detail. But both McCaffrey for team 3 and Swift for team 11 kind of helped fuel those particular strategies. But I think the thing that's particularly interesting to me with the McCaffrey team, that the team that was picking 3rd, is that quintet, word of the day, of receivers that he took after McCaffrey, it felt like the ADP was jumped a little bit on a couple of these guys, or maybe they were just not the players that you would tend to see going necessarily here. I mean, maybe Mike Evans in the 2nd makes some sense, but I hadn't seen Allen Robinson going in the 3rd round, late 3rd round to be fair, but still late 3rd. Darnell Mooney, Elijah Moore, I love that pick in the 5th, and then Kadarius Toney. That, you know, that's official helium. I wouldn't be surprised if that creates his new min pick over on the NFFC ADP.
Yeah, so you can, if I was correctly describing his strategy, you could see how it was playing out there, because I guess I would assume in my case that if I took Mike Evans and Allen Robinson, I might take another receiver with that fourth round pick. Excuse me, mm-hmm. After that. But I wouldn't have took 3 receivers in a row, and I wouldn't have took Rondale Moore 3 rounds after that, you know? So I think he's pretty clearly trying to sort of accept the limitations of what we can foresee, and sort of saying, I am going to just take these receivers, this particular number of them in this particular range, because there's whatever percent plausibility that 2 or 3 of them break out. And a certainty that, you know, 1 or 2 will not, but it's worth the overall expense and incurring the one or two misses there might be to make that much more certain that I get that breakout or two that I maybe can't foresee at the moment. So I get that theory with Toney. I mean, I don't see him breaking out to that extent, but he's, you know, very toolsy, has the first round pedigree. Rondale Moore, PPR, the scoring is, and if we already have DeAndre Hopkins suspended, what if Marquise Brown, you know, gets hurt or something? Rondale Moore could become like a 90 catch player on a per game basis for however long of a stretch that is. So, yeah, I think, it's chasing both high floor and high ceiling at receiver, which makes enough sense when you have a 3 receiver setup like this one, and you took McCaffrey in the first round. I think some of those running back picks were a little weird. But again, this is a guy who definitely has cashed a lot of times. And so I think if anything there is to take away here is that his strategy is kind of showing that roster construction and sort of just like resource allocation distribution matter as much as getting the players specifically correct, because there's things other than the talent levels of the players that matter. And I'm assuming his draft strategy is particularly sensitive to those points.
Okay. All right. I think that's a pretty good summation there. And yeah, if nothing else, he's just like giving himself enough ammo at receiver to, you know, you figure that end of the day, he's going to have three or four of those guys that are going to be starter viable.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I love Elijah Moore. That's how I would have played it. I would have been arrogant enough to say Moore is the breakout guy. I don't need these other two. Mm-hmm. I would have apparently spent the pick on a backup running back instead. Yeah.
exactly. Before we get on to the rest of your team, we've got a message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so let's break down the kind of second half of your team. You took Joe Burrow as your first quarterback, and you got him in the 7th round. You went pretty heavy at receiver. I think that definitely makes sense from there on, especially after taking 3 running backs in the first 6. So you got Robert Woods in the 8th, Tyler Boyd in the 9th. That pairs up nicely with Joe Burrow. Cordarrelle, like you mentioned, in the 10th. Good little PPR/flex option for you. Let's see, Sammy Watkins, Romeo Dubs in the 12th round, KJ Hamler in the 13th, and Corey Davis in the 15th. So stockpiling a lot of guys there. Were those all people that you were kind of targeting, hoping to get coming into this? Do you have a lot of shares of each of these guys, or was this a first time for a handful of them?
I don't have much Woods, Boyd. Woods.
I'm coming around on Woods a little bit.
Yeah. So I wanted Christian Kirk with that pick, and I would still, you know, trade Woods for Kirk if I had the chance. But I agree. I think if I did this draft again today, I don't know if Woods makes it that far. There's been some positive press since then. And I guess it's worth mentioning Treylon Burks. You saw the report about how he was like lining up in the wrong spot and had the wrong routes in mind on some plays.
Oh, I don't pay attention to these sort of things. I already made up my mind about him in April. So,
oh, fair enough. I'm just saying, totally kidding. But that is what a lot of people are definitely
confirmation
doing.
Bias.
I mean,
for me,
I think Burks is really super talented. So I actually don't really have a position on this. Cause I could imagine like, what if he just sort of starts studying harder the next 2 weeks, and even if he starts slow for the first month, it's like he just needs some switch to go off. And like, I'm not saying that he has some sort of like learning difficulty or something, but there have been guys in the NFL who have like actual learning disabilities and they're fine. So I think it's an issue of like maturity and doing his homework, basically, which, yeah, if he never does it, maybe he never gets going. But if he simply does, then there's no talent reason for him to fail. So I still feel anxious about Burks, even though I don't have any shares of his, and this news on him seems kind of bad. Cause I think it's true is the thing is that I don't know if it's going to matter that much, especially in the long haul, but I do think it is true. And I don't have any sources, but I know people who know people too, at least, who were telling me before the draft that Burks always had someone telling him where to line up at Arkansas, and he basically doesn't know routes and stuff. So I didn't publish anything on that because I didn't know whether A, I'm not going to just say anything, but like B, I didn't know for enough certainty to put out something that could kind of be a really big deal if it were true. But yeah, Burks has a history of this problem, and that it's popping up in Tennessee practices is actually not surprising. And I saw some people saying like, this is just crap, this is made up. It's like, no, man, it was out there.
Yeah, it was. And you know, I think you could even kind of find the devil in the details in the sense that, you know, he has the body type of an X receiver, right? Like a guy that you stick on the outside, but you know, such a high percentage of his snaps in college were out of the slot. And like it worked great for Arkansas, but I don't think it necessarily prepared Burks for the NFL in that sense, because, you know, basically when you have a guy with Burks' size and athleticism going up against nickel corners in the SEC, of course he's going to just crush. Like that is just, you know, a slam dunk possibility, especially when, you know, Arkansas is basically structuring their entire passing game around him the way that they did. And you know, college football tangent, that's why I'm worried about Arkansas for this year. They don't have that's such a big piece of that offense to try to replace.
Kentucky with Wandale. Yeah,
that's going to be an issue for Kentucky as well. So we'll see what happens there. But
anyway, yeah, I like Burks enough, but glad to get Woods here. It's playing it a little close even so, but it is PPR, and if Burks does start slow, then Woods could be real life ineffective and still very effective in PPR, because like, what is Nick Westbrook gonna catch 6 passes a game? No. Kyle Phillips is fine, but he's, you know, he's only better than Chester Rogers or whatever. Like, that's not moving the needle for me. He's not gonna carry your offense, and Hooper, whatever. So I can imagine Woods getting quite a bit of work if Burks is not showing Vrabel what Vrabel wants to see.
No, exactly. So this could be a tough rookie season at the very least for Burks. And you know, anywhere inside the top, I think, 12 rounds, I'm just not interested in Burks. A couple quick questions to get to. J-Red wants to know what the deal with Stafford is. He's back at individual drills as of Tuesday, so that's encouraging. But, you know, that – I just tend to feel like this could be a recurring problem potentially. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I'm just a little bit worried about Stafford. I think you can go with a different veteran quarterback where he's going. And I think it's an important detail to keep in mind as we move through draft season, as you're targeting the Rams offense. And then Julia wants to know, what makes Robert Woods a better option in this spot than Devontae Smith, if Smith also was available?
Yeah, so Smith was on the board. I guess I was probably thinking about the two of them, but Smith, my concern is he's a really good player. First of all, I don't doubt Smith's talent at all. I think he's clearly good, but I also think he's the worst kind of receiver to be paired with a quarterback like Jalen Hurts. Like, Jalen Hurts definitely benefits from bigger targets like AJ Brown, players who can mitigate the effects of his poor accuracy, basically. Devontae Smith would work better with a precision passer, and Hurts will never be that. So I am also, I'm worried about those things, and I'm worried about Smith maintaining any sort of significant target share, certainly not a target share, you know, proportionate to his talent level with AJ Brown there and Goddard. Goddard got really hot at the end last year when they started using him a different way. And Goddard was a really high volume pass catcher in college too. Like, he was a wide receiver in college, I think. He's just really big and athletic for a tight end, so he's playing tight end in the NFL. But I could imagine Smith being the third pass catcher on that team, and I expect him to be among the lowest passing volume teams in the league. So that's my concern with Smith. It's a combination of respect for AJ Brown and concern about Hurts as a passer, I guess.
Well, Devontae Smith is my wide receiver three, so I guess what we'll get a rubber meets.
I would have made that pick if it wasn't for Woods there. So it's not like I was it wasn't like I was running away from Smith or anything.
I got you. I think that those concerns are legitimate, especially when it comes to the structure of that offense. And if you're falling out of the top two in that target pecking order, then it's going to be tough. So I really had to kind of hammer receivers late, and we'll actually transition over there before. Or do you have anything else to add?
Oh.
Can I make fun of you for taking Tyrion Davis Price?
Oh, I didn't do that.
Oh no! Oh, okay. Shoot, I looked at the wrong screenshot.
You made me have like a panic attack.
No, I was pulling up my draft board, and obviously they look basically the exact same at a glance. Right. So like I was like team one took Tyrion Davis Price in the 12th. I was like, wait a second. So yeah, I couldn't have left you on red if that had happened. But yes.
Oh, no,
any other final thoughts?
No, so I was not targeting Sammy Watkins and Romeo Doubs, but when that pick, that 11, 12 round turn come up there, I was, I don't remember what exactly unfolded, but I remember at the time thinking like, okay, I gotta hope Watkins and Doubs both make it, cause I gotta take them. I knew I had to get more depth at receiver. I took Woods and Boyd, of course, but they're kind of band-aid solutions in my opinion. So I took Sammy Watkins and Romeo Doubs at that turn, consecutive picks, because I rationalized it like, okay, 11th and 12th round, late 11th, early 12th. If I can burn these two picks in exchange for getting the wide receiver two in Green Bay, whether it is Watkins or Doubs, then I thought it was worth it. Now, it might not work out. It could be like they both cannibalize each other. Maybe the Packers just suck on offense and neither one is useful. That's totally possible. But my options were pretty limited. I thought about Gallup and I guess Nico Collins would have been maybe Julio Jones. But I thought it's worth taking the zero if there's a zero from one of Watkins or Doubs in exchange for the other being the beneficiary. So hopefully they're both good, but I am reasonably confident at least one will be good. And I just love Hamler, so I take him a lot. Davis is the only pick I actually regret, and I took him because he was a good value. Like I think some other team really could have used Corey Davis in that 16th round before I took him, but I don't think I can use him. I'm probably going to have to end up cutting him for some, you know, running back, long shot fab pickup, and that sucks. But yeah, if I could trade Corey Davis for just pretty much any running back that went, I would do that. Hopefully he's good and doesn't get hurt, and I just have too many useful receivers. That would be better.
No, I totally get that. To go through an entire draft and not regret at least one pick is near impossible. So before we get on over to breaking down my draft, we got a couple messages from our friends. Starting things off, our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You'll have complete control over your team's future. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and use promo code ROTO5, that's ROTO5, to receive $5 off any new team. Again, that's ROTO5. Check them out over at Dynasty Owner. And then we got a message from our friends over at Fantrax. Is there something you wish your fantasy league had or features that are missing from your current leagues? Bonus scoring, custom schedules or playoffs, deeper team settings? Well, look no further, because we have you covered with our friends at Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Join MLB All-Star Jock Peterson, who recently announced he's moving his fantasy football leagues to Fantrax. Fantrax is excited to announce the Fantrax Game Day Experience Giveaway. Fantrax will be sending one lucky fantasy football league to a regular season NFL game of their choice, along with $6,000 towards travel and accommodations. All you have to do is enter the giveaway all you have to do to enter the giveaway is create or join a league on Fantrax. The more leagues you create and join, the more chances you have to win. There's a reason why fantasy football players who try Fantrax make it the permanent home for all their fantasy leagues. Go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. Fantrax, also great for college fantasy football, if that interests you at all. I am currently in the RotoWire staff college fantasy football league going on right now. I think we're 3 picks in, so enjoying that. Good-looking interface, and always enjoy using Fantrax for my college fantasy football and my NFL drafts, of course. All right, Mario, let's unpack my squad. Let's indulge here. So I picked out of the number 3 spot. Again, I took Justin Jefferson first, deviated from you slightly, did not take ETN in the second round. I ended up taking Tyreek Hill. I was actually really having an internal battle with myself about what would I do if Alvin Kamara was still on the board in the second round, but he was taken 2 picks before Leonard Fournette went off the board, and I didn't feel like there was a running back, whether it was going to be, I guess ETN was available. Chubb, I was not so sure on it in PPR. James Conner, Cam Akers were the other guys available. So I just kind of steered into the skid a little bit and took a second wide receiver. That again, was not my plan going in through the first couple of rounds. And then I really continued to steer into it by taking Kyle Pitts in the third. And that led me to kind of rechanging my strategy on the fly, going running back heavy with my next couple of picks just to kind of like cover my bases. So I took Ezekiel Elliott in the 4th round. I took Elijah Mitchell in the 6th round, CEH in the 8th. We'll get to him and Isaiah Spiller in the 9th. So leading things off, your thoughts on Tyreek Hill in this format as a second round guy?
I, of course, probably would have took ETN, but it's not because I disliked the Hill pick. And among the receivers that you had to choose from, I think he was the right pick because I would prefer Mike Evans in half point PPR. And I guess there's a case for AJ Brown too, but Tyreek Hill is much more likely to get 100 catches than Mike Evans or AJ Brown. Like those are, especially AJ Brown. He does his damage with the touchdowns and the big yardage per catch. He doesn't necessarily catch that many passes, but Hill, it would sooner be the opposite. Like he might only get 980 yards for it or something, but he's probably catching 100 passes if he's playing 17 games. And that's just to say the, you know, close to worst case scenario. He of course could be just legitimately strong and a great value at that pick. And again, I think he sooner would be the right receiver pick than Mike Evans or AJ Brown. It would actually be T. Higgins that I would sooner consider at that spot than Evans or Brown. And I guess Higgins went like 5 spots later. So yeah, all those guys that would have been in consideration for me went in the next like 4 picks after you took Hill. So can only take one, obviously. And Hill, I think, was a totally viable candidate among that group.
Yeah, so I don't have a ton of Tyreek Hill. I have a lot of Jalen Waddle thus far in draft season, but it's weird. I seem to gravitate towards Hill in these NFFC leagues. I took him last year. I actually kind of like stacked up the Chiefs a little bit last year. Obviously, Hill on the Dolphins now, but, you know, am I a member of QAnon now? Am I reading too much into the good things that are coming out of Miami's camp, or is it an extremely well-executed PR front to make us believe that this Dolphins offense is going to be anything better than it was a year ago?
Even if it's bad, they can only be bad in a way that puts a ton of usage on Hill. And I think Waddle too. Like I don't say this to put down Hill, but I think Waddle might pretty much match him this year. And it's because they just are going to have to use both of them, and they're going to run a spread out scheme. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball very well, even with the offensive line improvement. The offensive line, if it improves, is much more likely to improve as a pass blocking group. So at a certain point, it just seems to me like either the Dolphins are not running plays, or Hill and Waddle are catching a ton of passes, even if they don't go for the yardage and touchdowns that the Dolphins would need to be an actually good team.
Right. So we'll see what happens there. And I still believe that Tyreek Hill is still in his prime. So even if, you know, we're not seeing those deep shot connections for touchdowns, you know, there's still ways to where if he's just in space in the short intermediate part of the field, he can still just kind of run away from everybody.
If those guys, if the Dolphins fall behind like more than one score in any game, especially if it's in the first half, then both Hill and Waddle are on like 10 catch watch at that point. Cause the second defenses start giving them space to spin their wheels and just run out the clock on themselves with short catches, the Dolphins will have to take it. And so I think if, you know, the Dolphins defense is probably going to be okay, but we really want the Dolphins defense to be bad. Cause then Tua could go like 700 pass attempts and you know, just spinning their wheels with PPR points.
Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, hopefully that works out. And this Dolphins defense maybe takes a little bit of a step back. They're playing from behind and then just the PPR goodness flows from there. Because this is a 6 point for passing touchdown league, I took Justin Herbert in the fifth. But before then, Ezekiel Elliott in the fourth. I kind of had a tough conundrum. Obviously, the running back tiers kind of separated themselves and dried up a little bit after the first three rounds, especially after I took Kyle Pitts, or having to take Kyle Pitts in the third round. So Ezekiel Elliott versus Breece Hall was a really tough call for me, but I felt like this Cowboys offense, especially with how their pass catching group and the attrition that it's had over the course of the year, but you know, both through the off season and through the injuries that have happened, you know, through training camp and with Gallup and everything, I just feel like maybe they're going to be forced to run the ball a little bit more. And I don't think that Zeke is in his prime anymore. The ADP obviously reflects that. I think that, you know, maybe some of that has to do with some Tony Pollard optimism from some, but I think in all there was enough for me to think that Zeke is still that number one guy in Dallas. He can still get it done. And I think that they're going to run the ball a little bit more this year. And, you know, I think Michael Carter could be a problem for Breece Hall in a similar way that Tony Pollard is for Ezekiel Elliott. And I think that also you look at the Jets offensive line with Mekhi Becton's knee injury, like that all of a sudden that could be an offensive line that's not getting a lot of push up front for Breece Hall.
Yeah. So I still don't know where I stand on this at this point. I did prefer Breece Hall before the Becton injury. And I don't think the Becton injury means the Jets offensive line is going to be bad or anything, but it would have been easier to be optimistic about the Jets and the hindrance that Zach Wilson would otherwise pose if we knew that they'd have a definitely good offensive line and definitely good pass catchers, and all of that would kind of maybe lift up the quarterback. And it's just a bit narrower of a path, a bit more sketchy of a proposition without Becton there. So I can more easily convince myself to take Elliott. And it's not that I ever wanted to find a reason not to. I kind of avoided him because what the hell would it be? I guess back in underdog best ball drafts, especially a few months ago, I would have had to have been taken ETN at that pick. And I just, not that I wanted to fade Zeke, and I thought he was always a good pick when someone took him, but I preferred ETN. So I didn't end up with any shares. If I'm in the future staring down Hall versus Elliott and I'm looking for a running back at that point, I'm more likely to take Elliott this time around because I think his demise has been overstated and like eagerly awaited for a long time. Like he's for like 4 years, however long Pollard's been in the league, we'd have especially the zero running back choir just talking about all the ways that Tony Pollard's clearly better than Zeke, and if the stupid Cowboys hadn't spent a top five pick and contract extended Ezekiel Elliott, and
how dare they pay him? How dare they
just have to play the bad running back because they're paying him so much. Like, no, you don't understand how football works. You have to just let this go. You can't get through to these people that Ezekiel Elliott is a good running back and a valuable player, and Tony Pollard basically doesn't even play the same position as him. Like, the idea that like Zeke is what's blocking Pollard is not even true. What's blocking Pollard is his build. He can't take Zeke's workload. He's limited in that capacity. So people just think, oh, if Zeke would just get out of the way, then Pollard would be full Marshall Faulk. I'm like, no, that's not on the table. But this is interesting nonetheless that Dallas has these receiver injuries and Pollard is getting more reps at receiver. And it's funny to see the Pollard truthers say like, yes, this is it. This is finally happening. See, it's happening. Like we told you it would. Playing receiver is not as valuable as playing running back. And he's playing actual receiver when Ezekiel Elliott is playing actual running back. Now, Pollard used to vulture Ezekiel Elliott with running back reps, which is to say, if he's playing a receiver rep instead, that's a gain for Zeke more than it is for Pollard. And yeah, it's better for Pollard to be on the field, be it at slot receiver, than to be on the bench. But he's losing running back reps, and it's the running back position where he got those carries and those targets. So I'm sure Pollard gets a little bit of a boost with him playing receiver more. But Pollard moving to receiver reps, especially when Zeke is on the field, that's going to sooner be a gain for Zeke because he can get those targets now.
Right. No, exactly. So that all makes me feel better about Zeke. Julia wants to know our opinion on whether Hall is a better talent, prospect wise than ETN. I think we both might be of the opinion that that ETN was, you know, Hall's very, very good, but like ETN, I think, is like bordering on special. Obviously, with, you know, coming off the injury last year, we'll see, but everything seems pretty encouraging. And what we saw in college was fully rare from him. So I'm an ETN guy as far
ETN
as
ETN might
goes.
Be able to do the Falk thing. Pollard can't, mm-hmm. but ETN might.
Yes, exactly. So with that in mind, we'll push forward. Don't have to say much more about Elijah Mitchell. We both like him a lot. He seems to be for me, for you, like the, if you're picking running back at that particular part of the draft, that's just something that you're getting.
He's the ideal pick there.
Yeah. 100%. I took Devontae Smith in the seventh, and then things got a little bit away from me, or maybe not away from me, but things went a little bit differently than I expected. A lot of receivers that I was going to be targeting, guys like Rondale Moore, I was wondering where someone like a Jalen Tolbert was going to go. Chris Olave, got those type of guys that I was targeting for my eighth, ninth round. They started to come off the board a little bit earlier. Rondale Moore was certainly an ADP jump. He went in the middle of the eighth. I was really hoping to get him, and feel like I was jumping things by getting him in the ninth or the 10th round. So make me feel better about CEH in the eighth round, please.
Yeah, so I guess the running back situation in Kansas City is getting talked about a lot in general. Not even as much about CEH, of course, as Isaiah Pacheco and Ronald Jones. So I was a big fan of Pacheco, basically, when he put up that combine performance, and it kind of gave me reason to reconsider his Rutgers production, which at a glance was very bad. But you look at it in a little bit better accounting of how bad the offensive line and the quarterbacks were. Pacheco's totally good, and his athleticism is definitely NFL quality. He's a high motor guy. I think it's easy to see why he would make the team and why he'd be good, why he'd be dangerous in the Chiefs offense. But I also think Ronald Jones is clearly there to pick up the rushing slack that they're going to concede by having Clyde Edwards-Helaire run less and get more targets than he did in the past. Bizarrely, they've used him more as like a rushing specialist in the first 2 years. And I don't know if that's because, you know, him being an underclassman, especially, I don't know if it was like, we don't trust him quite yet on passing downs for pass blocking or whatever other reasons. I don't know, but I think they're clearly gearing up to use Edwards-Helaire more as a pass catcher and less as a runner. And less running is not good, generally speaking, but if the alternative is he just gets hurt anyway and still doesn't catch passes before he gets hurt, then I think this is clearly a preferable setup for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a scenario where he's more likely to last the whole year. And it's a scenario where, if that is true, I think Jones picks up the slack as a runner, which is to say about 12 carries per game, which is where Clyde Edwards-Helaire is capped. But if Edwards-Helaire is getting 10 to 12 carries per game and 4 to 6 catches, I think that's a smash value this year. And I don't have any exposure that I can remember, but it would be more because I was just targeting guys like Elijah Mitchell, Antonio Gibson, Rashad Penny, and Cordarrelle Patterson, the latter two being quite a bit cheaper than Edwards-Helaire, even with his public reception seemingly sinking at all times constantly. Yep. So it's not that I was trying to avoid Edwards-Helaire. I just thought the other two, Patterson and Penny, were like a little bit better, and even though they're a little bit cheaper. I think McKinnon is the one who's out, and what you're going to see is Clyde Edwards-Helaire getting like 10 to 12 carries, 4 to 6 catches, Ronald Jones getting 12 carries and like maybe one catch, and Isaiah Pacheco kind of being the swing backup type slash a guy who could be a problem if he gets his foot in the door. But the idea that they're going to just cut Ronald Jones and use Edwards-Helaire the same way they have in previous years and then have McKinnon be the passing down guy. I think that's clearly not happening.
Okay, yeah, that's not really necessarily adding up for me either. And this draft actually took an interesting turn, as you know, I was just talking about the receivers and everything. But at that point, there was one team, the team picking out of the fifth spot, that took five running backs with its first seven picks. So that kind of, yeah, you know, it doesn't taint the sample, obviously, but you know, Kamara, Akers, Breece Hall, J.K. Dobbins, and then Rashad Penny in the seventh round. So I was fairly confident after I made my seventh round selection of
man, that team also took Trey Lance within three picks of Mahomes, three rounds that already have drafted Mahomes.
Yeah, that's a lot of capital to be spending on quarterback. But yeah, so running back got a little bit murky there as well. So I'm just hoping that you know, I don't have particularly high hopes for CEH or anything. I'm just hoping that he can be a viable.
People think he's a bum, and he's not a bum. He got hurt. He got hurt both years, and he didn't play ahead of Jerick McKinnon in the playoffs because he had a busted shoulder. Like, McKinnon did not Wally Pip anybody. McKinnon was just the last thing sitting around, and the defense was like, hey, we're not going to defend him. He sucks. We don't care. Throw it to him, please. We're begging you. When Edwards-Helaire is on the field, the defense actually defends his targets because they know he's a threat, and the Chiefs have to get something from him. They know it can't be in the form of a 20-carry role. It has to be that they're giving him more targets and fewer carries than in past years, which is the best case scenario for him at this point.
Right. So then, you know, we could have the more efficient per touch type of workload. When it comes to CEH, I took Isaiah Spiller in the ninth. I haven't been super comfortable doing that thus far. And I kind of went against the brand that I had been building.
You're a hater?
In terms of, not a hater, but I certainly hadn't been one of his optimists necessarily. And I'd been more so inclined to be like a Damian Pierce guy, maybe a couple rounds later, but he actually went a pick after Spiller. But I felt like it was a worthwhile gamble, just, you know, in the event that, you know, God forbid, you know, Austin Eckler has to miss some time. Spiller can certainly pick that up. I don't think he does the same things as Eckler, of course, but I think Spiller can be a fine between the tackles, kind of take some pressure off of Eckler, take some of the wear and tear off of him, and be able to just be that north-south guy that I feel like they've really been missing since Melvin Gordon left.
Yeah, so I was pretty low on Spiller back when Draft Twitter was arguing about whether he was as good as Breece Hall or whatever nonsense they got themselves gassed up to. But him as a NFL player in an NFL offense that we project to score a lot, where his competition is Joshua Kelly and Larry Roundtree, it's at that point a very different question of like, how good is he? It's more like, is he good enough? And the level that he needs to be is quite low, as it were. So I think you can be very low on Isaiah Spiller as a talent and still think that he has a golden setup here with the Chargers, because they're going to give him upwards of 10 carries per game, even when Eckler is totally healthy. And if they should go up two scores in a game, you might see Eckler go to the bench for the rest of it. Like, they might just put Spiller out there to run out the clock if they ever get any leads that they can keep. So I think Spiller just needs to be better than Kelly. And Kelly, I don't even understand how he's been. He must have a case of the yips or something, because he's just been shook ever since he fumbled in like week two of his rookie year or something. And he seems like he's just running terrified. Spiller will run hard, at least. You know, I don't think he has much tools to work with, but he knows how to play running back. He's not going to go down easy. He's not going to just leave yardage on the field exactly. So I think that's all they need from him, and I don't think he has any competition for it.
Yeah, so locking in that number two role, especially behind a guy who's not going to be pushing for 300-plus carries, I thought that made some sense. Pushing forward here, went with a lot of receivers for these next few rounds. I went Chase Claypool in the 10th, KJ Osborne in the 13th, Romeo Doubs in the 14th, AJ Green in the 15th. Ended it last pick, Mr. Irrelevant for me, Simi Fehoko. you know, just obviously not really expecting much of anything from that one. Also took Pat Freiermuth as my tight end two in the 11th. I just felt like the pool was drying up. I think I'm kind of at max capacity as far as my Albert O shares are concerned. He went around later. Maybe I should have still taken him regardless of that. Had a little bit, I did not expect this, but I hadn't been really faced with this one just yet. But I was legit considering Cousins over Rodgers as my
QB. I prefer too. Cousins, actually.
Yeah, okay. All right. So
not to kick you while you're down. But, yeah. I mean, Rodgers should be fine. And besides, if Dobbs really is going off and you for some reason need to start Rodgers, you could have his number one receiver too.
Yeah, so the bye weeks line up just fine for
Herbert's gonna rake. Who cares?
Yeah. See, exactly. So it's all good anyway. And then let's see, rounding it out. Anything else of note? Took Gus Edwards late. I took Rex Burkhead late. You know, Edwards. The thinking was already had four running backs at that point. I don't need Gus Edwards in week one. I just need him potentially down the stretch if I don't cut him. Before then, I know that the reports haven't been glowing about where he is in his rehab. And then Rex Burkhead, 17th round, obviously a dart throw, but I think, you know, maybe early in the season, if Marlon Mack, you know, falls behind a little bit, or if Damian Pierce isn't quite as ready as we were hoping to take over that starting role, then, you know, Burkhead just kind of that inconvenient truth that exists in fantasy. And, you know, he ends up being, you know, somewhat useful at least once or twice.
Yeah. I think, you know, it is concerning what Gus is looking at, but he just needs to get in by like week six or something and you can hold on to him. And in the case of Burkhead, is for how much people try to, the zero running back people especially, have tried to reach to hype players like Daria Gumbawale and like recent Gio Bernard and players like that. These scab backs who just suck and don't do anything but take passing down reps from their betters. Rex Burkhead is a much superior version of whatever that is. And I don't hear anybody hyping him as like this late, you know, PPR point patter option, which I actually think he is. And I think if Burkhead is not that, if he's anything less than that, then it means Damian Pierce is a three down player. So I think either we're too low on Pierce or people are letting some, and I don't particularly see Pierce pushing aside Burkhead is the way I see it. And why I think Burkhead, at least for like the first half of the year, I think he might be catching, I don't know, like 25, 30 passes or something like that. And I don't think people see that as a possibility at all.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you're kind of in the bargain bin at that stage of the draft, especially with running backs, but you know, like other guys like Dontrell Hilliard, Hassan Haskins, Kenyon Drake, Mark Ingram, like those types available. I see a clearer path to relevance, at least right now for the early part of the season with Burkhead. So I was willing to take the plunge there.
I want to mention the crack shot real quick. Elijah Mitchell didn't fumble, so I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, he likes to just say every running back take we have is wrong, but
correct.
Doesn't usually work that way, my friend. I don't know if you're new around here, but you'll see soon.
Oh no, he hangs out pretty often.
Oh no, I mean, like going back years, I used to have guys on Twitter be like, "Oh, you said Kerryon Johnson sucks, and look at this. This is like week four of his rookie year." And I had same year guys be like, "Oh, then you said Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry are good. Where are you now, you loser?" And I haven't heard from that guy in a while, as it were.
Yeah, I hope he's doing well. Wherever
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's raking.
Almost certainly. But that's going to put us up against the hour. So that's going to do it for us here on this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Big thanks to our sponsors over at Blue Wire, at Fantrax, and at Dynasty Owner. Of course, for Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.